I will add just one piece because it got my attention. And it prompted me to inquire with Attorney John Burris, and that was the use of the taser as a weapon. Of course, we're hearing that the BART officers just received their tasers or the training on them in December. And within 2 to 3 weeks of their training, they had to have violated the principles of the training. When Mr. Peroni, the first officer on the scene, arrived and Oscar and his friends were standing on the platform, he comes toward them without dialogue. They're not fleeing from him. They're not fighting. There's no dispute going on. And he walks up to them and points the taser with a laser targeting device on it. So they're looking at their bodies with red dots, which says that somebody's about to shoot me. So when he arrives with them and follows up the laser targeted device with foul language, they quite frankly disregarded anything that he had to say because he threatened them without a cause. So I asked the attorney, what are the rules for the use of the taser? I've never known a taser to be considered a device for crowd control. I recall in my younger life in Los Angeles that the taser came to popular usage when angel dust or Sherman had become a popular drug in the communities. Now, we won't get into who invented it and who left it in the hood. However, when that drug became popularly used or used often enough, it found its victims with, they say, great strength and power, breaking out of handcuffs, unable to be restrained. So they produced this weapon that would physically disable them by causing a temporary paralysis by electrocution. Is that how taser works? Well, this weapon had a purpose during that time. Mr. Peroni walks up to a group of young men that are doing no wrong. Now, if somebody points a gun at me while I'm doing no wrong, what does that compel me to do? To defend myself or flee? You got two options, defend life or flee. So some of the young men may have responded with defensive words. Some went and got back on the train, but they were threatened. Then they said that Peroni went to the side of the train pointing the taser and its beam at people through the window. That's when he got on and said, get off the effing train. Well, now he's using his taser. They said that Oscar refused to comply with the instructions. If you watch, that moment that they declared that he refused compliance was when they trained a taser laser on his body, in his torso area. They sit on the ground. For what reason needed he to be tased? He's already down. If you want to cuff him, tell him to put his hands behind his back and cuff him. He's down. If you want him on his knees, then you ask him to get on his knees. They were debating over whether or not he was down enough. Then he squat. Now, if you don't tell me and get it down to get on my rear, I probably am not going to get on my rear, especially in the face of aggression. I might get on the knee. I may get in a position that allows me to move because I see I'm dealing with some characters that are unnecessarily violent. Doesn't take training for somebody to cause me to want to defend myself. Self-defense is as natural as breathing. So if he squats down while officers are threatening their lives and tackling their friends, and while he's sitting down, watch the video. The officer takes the taser, he's sitting down. He's no threat, and points the taser, runs the light right up his leg, and leaves the light, which is the target device, in his groin area.
Some have said that Oscar said, "Don't tase me, I'm a father." Now, I don't know when that conversation occurred. I haven't heard it yet in testimony. But if I'm sitting on the ground and you point a gun in my groin, I'm going to protect my groin. Brothers, can you bear me witness? You're going to do something. Move, turn, stand. He stood. While they were torturing him with the taser threat, there was no reason. They were responding to a misdemeanor aboard that train. There was no reason to have a taser in hand at all. But if you look at the video footage, there were several officers walking around with their tasers waiting. That they just got a new toy for Christmas. So the taser became a Christmas toy, and I'm going to use it on somebody somewhere. Some of you may recall about a month ago, a young man came to this town hall meeting and said they put him in December in or January in a BART police car and tased him 2 or 3 times. Now, at the last BART meeting, I told them I get more reports about brutality in the town halls than they claim to have gotten in the whole year before. They said that they received, I think, 12 citizen complaints. We've got more than 12 citizen complaints about BART police in this church in the last 5 months that we've been coming. So this use of the taser, so I asked the attorney, when did the taser become an instrument for crowd control? And if it is lawfully used as such, it shouldn't be. For it was developed to contain and to control out of control individuals that was sparked by the spread of sherm or angel dust, or whatever, what do they call it in the Bay Area? It was angel dust in the Bay Area, it was sherm in L.A. Well, whatever you call it, that weapon became used by law enforcement to control persons that they could not physically restrain. By the way, they didn't attempt to physically restrain Oscar and his friends in any real way, other than the order to sit down. And Officer Domenici insisted that she slammed Oscar against a wall with two hands. Now, was the wall behind them about 4 feet high? So if she's slamming him against the wall, then he goes over the wall. He'd be leaning over the wall. If she got him with two hands with a second degree black belt and took him to a wall, because the only wall present was a 4 foot wall. Again, the judge asked her, where is that? Or the DA asked her, where is that? She said, well, it's coming. Oh, no, there must be another videotape. For about 2 seconds, somebody walked across the front of the camera. But either way, for her to take somebody to a wall with a two-handed shove, and that wall is 4 feet tall, that person bends backwards over that wall. Yes, sir.
Remember, she said that Jackie Oscar tried to attack her. She had her arm, remember?
She said that
Oscar grabbed her arm.
And that she didn't remember it until she was meeting with her lawyer. And her lawyer pointed it out for her.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't feel nothing. And by the way,
she's a second degree black belt, right?
She's a second degree black belt. You start grabbing the wrists and the elbows of a second degree black belt in a fight, they will flip you.
Tell them apart when they were all sitting down, and she said that she assumed that they had guns. And the DA said, well, when Nigel was taking the brakes out,
right,
why would you let someone with guns with their hands?
And the brothers were sitting and waiting for the police to release them, in essence. Because Nigel was taking braids out of his hair while what she called and others called this mass chaos. They're trying to paint this image that said that all of the officers felt threatened by the scene while the young brother is taking braids out of his hair.
And they never searched any of these young men.
They have guns.
She said, we have to presume that they have guns. Then she was questioned about, well, if you presume that they had guns, why did not you use your gun hand or keep your gun hand free when you were talking to them? Why didn't you hold out your left hand and tell them to step back? Why did you take your strong hand, which is where your gun is? And it's not a gun, by the way. That's a cell phone. I want you to know that. Why did you take your strong hand? Aren't you trained to control the crowd using your weak hand and leave your strong hand free in case you needed a weapon? So she's functioning under the mindset that they've not been checked. I got to presume that they have weapons, and she keeps her weapon hand free. Finally, Ms. Dominici, she said that when the shot went off, like others, she refused to just say it was a shot. No BART officer yet said, I heard gunshot.
Let me just throw something in.
Yes, ma'am.
You missed that part of her testimony. She said, unlike the other officers who said, we heard something, but we weren't sure what it was, she said that she heard the shot, but she smelled, and she knew it was a gun.
Wow.
She knew it was a gun because there's a certain smell,
right.
And she gave that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And she repeated that several times, which contradicted her other fellow officers.
But what she also did, which didn't make any sense, she said it was at least 10 minutes, maybe even hours, before she even realized who had been shot. And she's 10 feet away. With her back turned, allegedly, when the shot fires. And I think that if a shot fired somewhere on the street right now, loud enough that you know you're in proximity, the first reaction from everybody would be a look. She said she looked at her brother officers, and they did not have an alarm on their face. Like this was a routine kind of thing. One would think if Mr. Mesley was so shocked by what happened, one would think everybody else would be shocked by what happened. There should have been an immediate response to Oscar's body by every officer on the platform if they were so shocked by, whoops, oh no, let's help this young man. Stop the bleeding, CPR, check his heart rate, do something. Can you imagine coming in the emergency room bleeding to death? And the nurse at the front desk says, name, do you have your medical record number? Do you have cocaine? That would be $100 to see the doctor. You don't want that. If you come in the emergency room bleeding, you want, your loved one is in there bleeding to death, you want to see doctors, nurses, police, everybody around running toward your loved one.
But one of the officers, Wolfenden, said that even after Oscar was shot, he continued to resist.
And they accused Oscar Grant of resisting arrest for involuntary movements of his body after he was shot.
And they said, yeah, there he is.
Yes, sir.
Then, remember from the judge, one officer said that he thought Oscar, one of the young men, had shot a cop. And the judge said, well, if you thought a cop was shot, why were all of you just still standing here? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you take your guns out if you thought Oscar Grant shot the cop?
Because we thought the situation was under control, but not one of them pulled their weapon, and not one of them pushed their emergency.
They've been calling so many lies in this.
You know, it's real important that, you know, I mean, for those especially that have to be in court to hear this fabrication is taking place, this cover-up is taking place. But what I believe that's real important is that we look at the state of mind these officers had. But Dominique can say that it was so chaotic that I knew I was going to have to kill somebody.
That's what she said.
Mm-hmm. When she can adjust, I hold up, Lori, who are you going to shoot first? Well, who was you going to decide to shoot first?
The judge had to ask.
The judge had to ask for that because now we're talking about the state of these police officers and their attitude for human life.
That's right.
You know, and we could go on to talk about other areas where the expression about the non-respect for people of color first, and then the respect for light. Because and I want to thank you too, Dr. Castro, for the synopsis of what's been going on in there. You know, because you're not going to hear it in the media about what's really going on in the courtroom. You know, there is a massive cover-up that's taking place, where attempting to be taking place. You know, and what's real important is that what we see is what the police officer, their mental state, that the atmosphere that they work up under is about. And that is what we truly see that happens, really, as far as they're concerned, don't happen. And this is what they want us to believe. And so we as a people cannot let this go by. I mean, it's not just about Oscar. This is about people and their lives. Because when an officer can tell you that I'm going to shoot somebody, or Oscar wouldn't be dead if he had just sat down. You know what I'm saying? If he had sat down, he would have been killed.
We would have just slain him and released him.
And then they asked her. They asked Ms. Dominici, would you have done anything any different? She said, no, I wouldn't have done anything any different. Now, she should have said, I wouldn't have come to court and lied about running past 40 people that don't exist on the video. She should have said, I wouldn't have been so angry because some young people challenged me about what my authority is. She should have said that I wished that my brother officers, whether it was an accident or on purpose, that since it was unwarranted, that this never would have happened. And they asked her, gave her a chance to show humanity. And say, do you have any regrets? She said, no. No regrets. So you gotta move quick. Yes, sir.
But then, you know, this is what's been going on for years. Without a video, this is why young men have been getting killed, because when they come to court, their word is gold. And all the time they have been lying, like for instance.
The police word is gold.
Police are always lying. And if it wasn't for the video, and I mean, I got to say, the DA is doing a magnificent job, and no one is giving them no credit. The news is there. Me and her, we're there at 6 in the morning. The news is there at 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to ask them, what are you here for? Because you're not reporting. You're not reporting nothing. And this is what else I want to say. Remember when all the officers said, all 5 or 4 young men broke down in karate stance? Challenged them. Where does that show in the video?
Of course, it doesn't exist.
All 5 young men at the same time broke down in the karate stand.
They didn't know karate.
We should say that the judge, for those of you who don't know, the judge is African American. And we don't want to assume anything. He appears to be fully engaged. In fact, for a little bit, he seems like he wishes he was the trial judge, because he's being very patient in allowing all of this testimony to come in that really isn't necessary for a preliminary hearing. And the questions that he is asking are the questions you would expect for a trial judge to ask to help clarify matters for a judgment for the plaintiff.
He's allowing a record to be made.
He's allowing them.
So I don't know what Mr. Raines really thinks he's going to achieve other than fight this fight with the public opinion. And that's where the significance of the press comes in. Because their failure to report what actually is happening is spectacularly clear. So if you're hearing things from us that you thought you would see on KTVU, and the sad thing is there are brothers and sisters in the press whom I know and befriend, but they have no power. And one of the young brothers that has been reporting, I think, broke down and cried coming out of one of those hearings. But that doesn't mean that his reporting is going to reflect the pain that he felt, because they're paying him whatever they pay him to represent the party line. So we would say to those that have, we have some of this footage here that we have here in the town halls, that we have to find a way to press this message out that the community might hear in mass. Sister Erica.
And I was wondering if Sister Wood spoke at Wildside or something, because I know when I was talking to my family about it in Sacramento,
what is your site, sir?
IndyBay.org.
www.indybay.org. or you can get the town hall proceedings, many of them,
and,
as well as Caravan for Justice.
And we've been posting transcripts from inside the hearings, too.
As well as some of, we have some printed reports of some of those who took notes inside of the hearing itself. So Dr. Pasco and others are going as witnesses. They're typing up their insights and their views of what had happened. But IndyBay.
I-N-D-Y Bay.
IndyBay.org to get updated information. Now, I want to move forward. We have a very important special person here who is helping us to bring these kinds of messages to other parts of the world, to bring our sister forward. I want to bring our brother, who himself has been an activist in and around issues that affect our people in the United Nations. And so you may see him here in Oakland and may not realize there's an international connection here, but I want you to join me in receiving again to this microphone to introduce our special guest who just returned from Geneva, Switzerland. And this issue is now growing in those areas. So please join me in receiving our brother, the Reverend Daniel Buford.